And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4.5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2024. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show, and we have our usual mix for you. But we also have our lines open for you to talk about what you want to talk about. Maybe there's an issue you wish to raise, something positive that you wish to highlight. We're open for all. 07491 25000. Donna Marie and Shannon taking your calls today. 07491 25000. If you want a WhatsApp or text, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. And a reminder for you that if you want to send your voice notes to us, we can play them out in air for you. It's another way to get your point of view across. Get them into us right now. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp number as well, as I mentioned, but that's for your voice notes if you want to send your comments in that way. An email is always there for you. Hopefully you're on email. 08 that's the number. Comments at highlandradio.com. that's it. comments at highlandradio.com. and we're streaming live for you to watch the show if it suits you and your lifestyle. We're on the X platform at Highland Radio, on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, so you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, Dr. Dennis McCauley, the newly appointed president of the Irish Medical Organisation, voiced grave concerns about the ongoing challenges plaguing the country's healthcare system. Addressing the IMO annual general meeting in Killarney on Saturday, Dr. McCauley underscored the detrimental impact of bed consultant GP shortages, which have resulted in alarming long waiting lists. And Dr. McCauley is going to join us on the show a little later on as well, live. We'll tease out many of those issues with him as well. So were you glued to your TV yesterday for all the pomp and ceremony of Simon Harris becoming Taoiseach? I thought some of the commentary was quite amusing. Like, I actually did chuckle. It was almost like the BBC do a royal wedding, you know, and it's Peter Burke is standing on the steps, and I see Patrick O'Donovan there taking a selfie, and they wait as Simon Harris is set to emerge, and Jennifer Carol McNeil is there, you know what I mean? And I just thought, oh, hold on, you lads. We see these people all of the time, it's, you know. But anyway, Taoiseach Simon Harris has played it safe, we're told, with a Conservative cabinet reshuffle despite the promise of new energy. The new Fine Gael leader put geography ahead of gender as he handed promotions to men from the Midlands and Munster. Government sources insist there is strong logic behind keeping the rest of Leo Varadkar's team in place, including concerns that the civil service, this is a really important line, the reason some are saying he kept Leo Varadkar's team in place is because the civil service would run rings around new ministers if there was a wholesale change. Who is running the country, folks? I think we often talk on this show that really often it is more likely the civil service than the actual elected representatives. But the Irish Independent can also reveal details of the intense lobbying behind the scenes that influenced Mr. Harris's choices over recent days. Former Taoiseach Francis Fitzgerald is said to have been instrumental in saving Justice Minister Helen McEntee from demotion, and Social Protection Minister Heather Humphreys pushed for Limerick TD Patrick O'Donovan to take over as Minister for Further and Higher Education. The two women are close confidants of the new Taoiseach. So there you have it. We shall see. A €240,000 salary, which is nice, isn't it? And a jet, there are perks to the office. New Taoiseach Simon Harris says his appointment as leader of the country is the honour of his life. However, there are more concrete benefits to the office. The total pay, €239,000 a year. Mr. Harris's earnings are made up of $111,000 and an additional $127,000 for holding the office of Taoiseach. Either salary is about three times the average Irish worker's salary of €44,000. Now, that €44,000 is often talked of as the average Irish worker's salary. I can tell you the average salary in Donegal is much lower than €44,000. But anyway, the Taoiseach gets six times the average standard wage. even if far below some chief executive salaries available in the private sector. There is also the modern anomaly that the Taoiseach earns substantially less than some senior civil servants, such as a Health Secretary General Robert Watt, who is entitled to over €75,000 more. Can you imagine? Like, if you can, it's why are senior civil servants, why are politicians paid so much? And then you see the difficulty is, oh, maybe they can, I don't know. But if you don't sort of live the life of an average person or understand the impact of the increase in the cost of price of milk or 15 cent on your soft drink or whatever it might be, petrol, diesel, it's very difficult, I think, to, is it not, understand what it's like in the real world when you are clearly not living or don't have to live in the real world. But it's not just like that here. That's just the way the world's run, it seems. The Irish Times, the government will formally recognise the state of Palestine in a long-awaited move expected to take place in the coming weeks. Hours after Simon Harris was elected Taoiseach, Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs Micheál Martin told the Dáil the approach of delaying recognition is not credible or tenable any longer. He said he'd been in discussions about recognition with other countries involved in peace activities in Gaza, adding, "It is my intention to bring to government a formal proposal to recognise when these wider international discussions are complete, but he is no doubt recognition of a Palestinian state will happen," Mr. Martin said. Now, just as to read this, this paper's all mangled on me. You might, if you were listening on Friday, we had a chat with Seamus Gunn about payments. Yeah, for accidents, compensation claims and what have you. And we were awaiting the outcome of a court judgment on insurance premiums and the Book of Quantum and all this type of stuff. So this is something of a follow-up to that conversation with Seamus on Friday, and it's covered widely in the newspapers. Insurance premiums must be cut following a landmark Supreme Court judgment approving lower levels of compensation for injuries. That's according to ministers and campaigners after the seven-judge court ruled that personal injury award guidelines voted into force by judges 3 years ago are legally binding. The court dismissed most of the claims brought by Bridget Delaney from Dungarvan, who tripped on a pavement in 2019 and sued Waterford City and County Council. She believed her fractured ankle was worth up to 11 times more than the €3,000 she was offered by the Personal Injuries Assessment Board. Her action against the PIAB, the judicial council in the state, was the lead case among several challenges to the lower rates of compensation for minor accidents, which have been awards for pain and suffering reduced by up to 40%. Judge Peter Charlatan said the court had been made aware that the result of this case as to the validity and operation of the personal injury guidelines passed by the Judicial Council will influence thousands of cases currently awaiting judicial analysis and multiples of that into the future. So this was a lead case, effectively, which said, she said, my injuries are worth more than €3,000. The €3,000 was awarded by the Personal Injuries Assessment Board. And what this might do now, they expect it to do, it seems, is to discourage other cases along the same lines, and now there are calls for these obvious savings to insurance companies to be passed on to us, the consumer. They have to pay out less, so they should be charging us less. Just a little bit of an insight into the horse racing industry and our treatment of horses in this country. It kind of somewhat came as news to me. It's in the Irish Daily Star. Nearly 50 thoroughbred race horses under 2 years old were among 1,428 horses slaughtered for meat in Ireland last year, new figures have revealed. The age profile of the horses killed in the meat factories last year has been described as deeply disturbing by the Animal Aid charity. Their own investigation into the slaughter of racehorses led to major changes in the industry in 2021. They formed the basis of a Panorama documentary which claimed that injured Irish racehorses were being transported to the UK abattoirs, contrary to animal welfare guidelines. New details have emerged ahead of the UK Grand National at Aintree this weekend, where 33 of the 50 runners will come from Ireland. It also follows the launch of a new communications campaign regarding animal welfare by the British Horse Racing Authority last week. So 49 thoroughbreds aged under two among 1,428 horses killed for meat. Now, I am not sure if they're UK or Irish figures. It does say it is in Ireland, but I'll have to double check that because the number does seem very, very high. But it's in the Irish Daily Star. But anyway, be that as it may, I don't think that's what people think the tens of millions of euro going into the horse racing industry would be supporting. The Irish Sun this morning, a dad has warned parents to be vigilant after he discovered a Facebook international dating site for kids. This is really, really quite worrying. I did see this screenshotted and shared on social media. Kind of thought, could this possibly be real? Because it's so open for exploitation by bad adults. James Toomey shared the sick page for 9 to 18-year-olds on a local community group in Cork. Outraged parents successfully launched a campaign to have the site taken down. James said some 99% of the page's comments were people saying that it needed to be taken down. People were just disgusted, which is kind of worrying, isn't it? And if that's one that's spotted, how many are not spotted? And you can just see it being used as a tool for exploitation, very sadly. And finally, and I think this is something we're going to have to get a little bit used to going forward, such as the way the world is at the moment. It's in the Irish Daily Mirror. Security has been ramped up for this week's Champions League matches after Islamic State terrorists issued a chilling threat. An image of a masked gunman and the words "kill them all" alongside the names of four football stadiums were published by a pro-IS media channel. The venues, including Arsenal's Emirates Stadium, where the North London club hosted Bayern Munich last night in their quarterfinal first leg. Another one listed was Real Madrid's Bernabeu Stadium, where Manchester City played yesterday. So IS are formally threatening these types of events. And as I say, with everything that's going on in the world and you know, some of the actions that's been taken are probably going to lead to more and more of that going forward, very, very sadly. Now, we have spoken regularly about access to Greenan of Alia over the last number of years. But unfortunately, we're talking about those who have gained access and are involved in unsavoury behaviour. Bettina joins us on the programme again. Bettina, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Right. So what's happening or what has been happening up at Greenan of Alia?
Well, the last few weeks, basically since the equinox in March, I have been observed that someone drove a motorbike inside the Greenan and just had a few loops and left again. You could see the tire tracks inside. And that was now a couple of occasions. And last Sunday, someone drove a squat bike around the Greenan. It was actually observed by a friend of mine who was visiting his mother, and he could see the lights coming in and out, which would go with someone riding around the Greenan. And this is very worrying because we only got a more open access back to the Greenan from the OPW, and behavior and actions like this can only lead to one outcome, and this is the OPW locking the Greenan up again. And this is very worrying and very much concerning that this could happen again because of a few people abusing the open gate for such actions.
What can be done, though? I mean, you can make the appeal. It could fall on deaf ears, as you say. The OPW could very easily say, you know, we can't police this all of the time. There could be risk to the individuals or those attending there. There could be a big claim, and therefore we're going to have to restrict access once again to the fort, which is one of the things that you have a concern about. But what can be done to discourage this type of behaviour?
Well, I basically would ask those people involved in it to stop, and anyone observing it, taking photos, the license plate if possible, and report them to the guards. Because as I said, if it can't be stopped, if it won't stop, then there is only one action available to the OPW to lock it up again. And that would be for the protection of the monument. You know, so, and I mean, I was there on Monday evening for the eclipse. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't believe the amount of people who were there. The car park was overflowing.
Yeah.
People actually had to park along the road, you know, and there were families and there were groups of young people and there were couples. You know, I completely, as I'd done the petition, I completely had forgotten about the eclipses because they only happen so rarely. But it's like a tradition that people go up, you know, and this, of course, was in the evening at 8 o'clock. If the OPW locks the monument again, that would have not been possible. People could not have come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so basically people here, local people, have to help to stop this type of behavior. That if they know of someone who's doing it, or if they observe someone doing it, that they put a stop to it.
Okay.
Before the OPW puts yep. the lock on the gate back again.
Indeed. And it's I tell you, if this type of activity continues, it is a likelihood which would be awful for this, especially with the extended access and opening hours if this were to happen. Okay. Bettina, thank you very much for your time this morning. I do appreciate it as always. John McAteer of the Tyrconnell Tribune joins me on the show now. John McAteer, good morning to you. How are you keeping this fine Wednesday morning?
I'm fine, despite the fact it's not a great Wednesday morning. It's just lashing rain.
Yeah, lashing. It is. It's mizzly, and I think it's going to be like that for most of the day. But hopefully, as I said earlier, hopefully next week we might get some sort of a respite. I'm not sure you're the biggest fan of this current government or not, John. But I think you're not. But were you underwhelmed by Simon Harris's, I suppose, elevation to Taoiseach and subsequent sort of slight reshuffle?
Underwhelmed, I suppose, in a certain way. The reshuffle, I suppose, has much as expected, Peter Burke in the Midlands and Patrick O'Donovan in Limerick. It was quite evident that he had very little choice there because Fine Gael was going to have no senior ministerial post in the whole province of Munster, yet Fianna Fáil had Micheál Martin and Michael McGrath and Norma Foley. So that was inevitable. There was going to be Patrick O'Donovan because he's from Limerick County, Newcastle West. He's there 8 years as a junior minister, pretty competent. I suppose Peter Burke, not as well known, but he is an accountant, so he's pretty well fit for enterprise and employment. Underwhelmed, definitely. It was quite obvious that whilst Simon Harris is in control, he's not the boss. And Fine Gael headquarters is going to dictate that at all times. How much better is the cabinet? Probably it's like a new paint. You'd hardly notice it was put there.
A lot of attention was on the future of Justice Minister Helen McEntee. A lot of people wanted her moved out of justice, and maybe, you know, it could have been seen as a new broom, and maybe they could have adjusted some policy or messaging in relation to some of the responsibilities under her portfolio. But also, too, the fear was is that it could be seen as a victory for those who are anti-Helen McEntee, often some of them labelled as the far right, in inverted commas. In the end, he played it safe and just sat with her there.
He probably had no choice because Helen McEntee is royalty within the party. The McEntee name is one of the legendary names of Fine Gael. And I would say that whether he wanted to do it or whether he didn't, he had no choice. He was going to be hemmed in there by the hierarchy within Fine Gael, and that's how politics works. And Helen McEntee, while it's just been a very poor 4 years for her, it's been a very difficult time for her as well, given that the relationship between the Garda Commissioner and the Gardaí is at an all-time low. And the numbers in the force haven't been able to be brought up to where they should be. Did she deserve to be moved? I would have said so. So we're still going to continue for the next 11 months because we're down to about 11 months now before an election. We're still going to be left with Helen McEntee there, whether we like it or whether we don't, or whether he likes it or whether he doesn't. So it was a bit of an anti-climax last evening at 5:30 when he came back to announce those details and got their seals of office. Will it make any real difference? No, it won't, despite you're going to have a promise a day, at least one promise a day from Simon Harris, because that's his modus operandi. He's good at that, and he forgets about it the next day.
But the public are not just going to be passed off with words, are they? to talk of 250 houses being built over the last over the next 5 years. Like, I was chatting to people since that announcement was made, and they were saying, well, where are the builders even to build the mica houses? And I know it's not mica, but that's, you know, sort of the common phrase that's used now.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I
think if you lined up 1,000 people, I don't think 100 of them, or even less, would think that that's an achievable target. So throwing numbers and figures and promises out doesn't wash it with the Irish electorate, I don't think.
Oh, absolutely not, because if you looked at the Ireland Thinks poll in the Independent on Sunday, he has done nothing to lift their ratings in the polls whatsoever. Like, he's there for 2 weeks, so that was the first test of character for him. And with the Irish Independent being pretty forensic in what to do with their own polls, I would have expected Fine Gael to have risen by about 3 points. They didn't do that. They went down one. Fine Gael went down one. Sinn Féin went down one. But it is the Independents who are making all the ground there. Now, Simon Harris will not be fit to get away with what he's promising to do, because there seems to be no thought or no. There's no policy. There's no funding. There's no nothing behind that. At the end of the day, after 13 years in government, Fine Gael in the first 4 or 5 years did a very, very good job in restoring the country to some degree of normality on the international money markets. And like, that's fair play to Enda Kenny, but since that, it's been quite downhill, because they lost too many seats. They're a party in decline. The grassroots is in decline. They can't get enough candidates to contest local election seats here in Donegal, and I'm sure it's the same elsewhere. Like, they are in difficulties. How they can rebuild that? Can they rebuild it? Simon Harris, I don't think so.
Well, let's take the government as a whole. Would you agree the top three issues are health, housing and immigration?
Oh, definitely.
What order would you put them in terms of the general public in Ireland? How would you order them? Not in terms of what the most important is, but the things that they're most motivated to vote about.
Health, housing and immigration.
You'd put immigration last.
The top three. I think so. I think I know what you're saying there. It depends where you have Ukrainians living close to you. Now, we have them in Milford. We have them in Fannet. We don't have any issues whatsoever with them. We meet them regularly. We don't have, maybe tolerance is probably the word that's missing here, but there's a vacuum there to fill. And there will be candidates.
Can I tell you, though, why I think immigration is the top one? Because I think people out there think that if we don't get a handle on immigration, housing and health is going to continue to get worse. So I don't think until such time as any government puts out a policy or a strategy that has what appears to be better managed immigration, that there can be any improvement in housing and health. And that's why I actually would put immigration above the two of those, because I think that's the one that is far easier to get our heads around. It's the one that seems to be the most immediate problem, and it's the one that seems to be having the most impact. And not for racial reasons or anything like, or cultural reasons, literally just in terms of, I think a lot of people out there, the majority of people out there, think that we need to be doing something to limit the influx of immigrants, asylum seekers into this country, and until such time as we do so, access to healthcare, be it GP, acute hospital care, whatever it might be, and access to housing is going to continue to be more difficult.
But you asked the question, if the Ukrainians weren't here at all, would it do very much in by way of improving the healthcare system? Mm. Would it do much in accommodating families and houses? Because I don't think it actually would.
No, all of these problems existed, of course, beforehand. But you can't, if you have and to be honest with you, I think also there's a slight difference in people's attitudes towards Ukrainians and also international protection applicants, if the truth be told, right? But if we had a struggling health system in this country, struggling school system, access to school transport, access to the hospital, access to housing, and you increase in a population by 12,000 euro, 12,000 people, I beg your pardon, obviously people are going to feel, whether it's the truth or not, that that's having a detrimental impact in the improvement of those services.
Well, that's going to be the public perception. The public perception is out there that about 60% of people, I think the latest polling figures would show that about 63% of those polled would suggest that we've already taken in too many immigrants. There's only a very small number in favour of it. There's a fair chunk there that's undecided. Yes, like it is a big issue, but I wouldn't take it in isolation. We do have an element out there, and I wouldn't even call them far right. There's a group of people there who are very vocal in the fact that we've taken in too many. I mean, if we didn't take them in, somebody else would have to take them in. I mean, we're bound under conventions of international
yes, but you see,
agreement.
I think too, John, and I hope you know, I don't want to be, I'm certainly not being argumentative, but again, I don't really think that's what the issue is. I think the people concerned is that an awful lot of people get off planes for which they had to have a passport to get onto, and get off the plane and they have no documentation whatsoever. Very difficult to track or trace who they are. The system in terms of processing them is very, very slow. You know, I don't think the general population's concern, and I could be far, far out, is necessarily about core numbers. It's about how it's being managed and who is being let in.
Yeah, this has been ongoing now since 2 years last month, and I think that we have 6,000-7,000, maybe more in Donegal. I think that we have managed that reasonably well, okay, given the circumstances and given the urgency that these people were fleeing war and potential life-threatening events in the Ukraine. So we had to take them in. We're bound by that convention to do so. Now the question is, did we take in too many too quickly? I might go with accepting that would be the case, but you know, the country is still not full. There are empty houses everywhere.
Yeah, but I think when we talk about full, it's about services rather than properties. I mean, we've got 12,000 holiday homes lying empty in Donegal, so obviously it's not full, and we had double the population pre-famine. I think really when people talk about fullness, it's about school places, hospital places, GPs appointments, dental appointments.
But I mean, there's a feeling out there that these people have come over here and stolen our jobs and all this kind of thing. That is not factual. It's not true. They're getting their entitlements. Those entitlements have been reduced. Perhaps the very first day that we were probably very over generous and giving them the full amount of social welfare and giving them shelter as well. But that's done and dusted. That's going to be reduced.
Yeah, for new arrivals, not for those currently here. They're going to be maintaining those currently here.
It is a very big issue out in the public there. We're getting that an awful lot from just the general public out and about. There is an issue about Ukrainians. It's unfair to name Ukrainians, but the numbers that are there are always name checked.
See, the funny thing is you see, John, again, just on this, and we'll move on. I have heard very little negative conversation about those that are fleeing the war in Ukraine. It is seemingly more international protection applicants that people seem to be particularly vexed about. But anyway,
well, we have about 12,000 of those, from what I see from the figures, mm-hmm. and that's not a huge number. Maybe it is when you combine the whole lot together. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the country's still full, because I am aware of accommodation which has been given the status of housing refugees, but they have not been able to provide evidence that there are school places or health centre places for them.
Okay.
We have that all over the place. And I do accept that health centres are full. Health centres have been very full ever since the beginning of COVID. And I wouldn't specifically, not every Ukrainian is standing at a health centre every day of the week, you know, of the year.
What do you think Simon Harris needs to do over the next, we're going to have a lot of focus on elections, right? And then there's the summer break. So really, in terms of what can be done between now and the next election, there's not a ton of time. There's a lot of time to talk, but not a lot of time to do anything. What do you think he will try and do to try and win over voters? And do you think he'll be successful in doing so?
Well, he's got to get out into places like Donegal and try and rekindle the organisation, try and get the grassroots motivated, because that hasn't been happening in 10 years. And this is why locally and this is our constituency, they're at a very, very low ebb, and that very little has been done to motivate the grassroots. Now, that's going to be a very, very big task because, you know, it's not that long to the summer break. I think he has 100 days, I think somebody said yesterday, on till the actual summer break. And then they go back in September and they're into preparing for the budget. That debate will take them right up to Christmas time. And I don't think there'll either be an election before Christmas time or one. I don't think they'll come back after Christmas. I think there'll be an election called for February. He'll have very, very little time to have any impact or to have any footprint whatsoever on any policy documents or anything like that. And I mean, he is bound within the terms of the three-party agreement anyway, so he's tied in there. He's tied in by budgetary constraints. There isn't a lot he can do, but he can talk a lot. Is he better than Leo Varadkar? Is he not? Is he too young? All of these issues will unravel and sort themselves out. It'll take a few opinion polls to see what the general public, how they're rating him. So far, from what we've seen from the independent poll, his rating is not going to lift the party all that much.
I think I would, if I were advising him, you know, I think really you, if you're going to try and be angry, you know, and shaking the fist and furrow the brow, that kind of has to be how you're perceived, or you have to be able to pull that off. And I think just maybe he might struggle to do that. I think his advisors should try and get him to stick to what he might be good at and not trying to be something that he's not. Because, again, I really do think it's a big mistake to underestimate the public. Just before I let you go, John, the local elections now, just over 2 months away, aren't they?
Yeah, 8 weeks from Friday.
Eight weeks from Friday. What are they going to be run on? Because are they going to be run on some of the issues that we've been talking now, or is it about personalities, or is it about families that always had voted a certain way? Do you think there's any likelihood of a political seismic shift just in Donegal, let's focus, across our county? Or when you look at it, you can sort of see the regular faces that are probably almost guaranteed, aren't they, to get their seats, and we might have a few interesting battles for the final one or two seats, or do you see it completely differently?
What I would see this time around is that the Mickey Redress Party will shake things up a little bit. To what extent? The willingness is shown, possibly in Letterkenny. There's a candidate in Milford. I don't know many others. I haven't been talking to Ali Farron in a few weeks. But Micah is one of the issues that's been mentioned literally on a daily basis. And there are people out canvassing for the Micah candidates that would never have been canvassed in their lives before. That is going to have a difference here in Donegal. To what extent, we're not going to be quite sure of that. But local elections will always be fought on the personalities, because we know them, we know the councillors. And there's claims there that they've done nothing in Lifford for the past 5 years, which is absolutely lying and untrue. Councillors work pretty hard, but it's very hard to achieve progress within the Department of Government, because things work very, very slowly. People will say we're not building enough housing. That's, the councillors are doing their best to improve that, to lobby that. It's a long, long, hard slog being a councillor. And I know councillors are running this time who would prefer not to be running, but they put their names in there anyway. They're there 20 years or more. They get very little thanks for it from the public, to be quite honest with you. But the numbers of meetings that they're obliged to attend, long, dreary meetings, it's all on government issues and government policies, like you'd be talking about housing, like you'd be talking about the infrastructure or whatever else. It's very, very hard to mobilise a local government. They give it their best shot. That's all they can do. I would never have any complaint with the councillor. I ring them quite regularly to lobby for something, and they're there to talk to you. They're there to talk to the public. But this notion that councillors are doing nothing in Lifford is a lie. Absolutely a lie.
Okay, right. All right, John, listen, thanks very much indeed. I do appreciate your time, and we'll chat again really soon, I'm sure. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye.
Good morning.
But good morning to you, John McAteer. I mean, John's starting to part in our opinions. I don't know. No, I'm only messing. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call in 07491 25,000. Your emails to comments@highlandradio.com. If you want to send in a voice note, by the way, on your WhatsApp app, then hold down the microphone key and send it in to us, and we can play it out, or at least listen to it. Right. Derek Viles, Director of Tourism and Expeditions with Tour Donegal and Tour Ireland Guide. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Derek. Did I get your titles correct there, yeah?
Well, you know, that'll do for now. I have different hats on, but today I'm just a local resident. Yes, with an interest in tourism, taxi and buses, bringing Ukrainians and internationals to the IPA Centre in Dublin, from Mount Street, to schools, everything. So I think I'm probably the right man to be talking about this today, I hope, anyway.
All right, okay. Now, you've been expressing your opinions, I suppose, on our hosting of IPAS refugees in Donegal and beyond. What's your view?
I've been expressing it for quite some time, so it's not today or this month. I've been in talks behind the scenes with government and with County Council, and thankfully with whistleblowers within both IPAS and Donegal County Council for about, since I've done a letter to the Irish Times on the 7th of February last year. It was podcasted by Niall Delaney at Ocean FM on the 9th. People can go and have a look at that, so we don't have to cover the same information, hopefully, i.e. that I'm a racist or I have an agenda. I also did an interview, and it's podcasted with Ocean FM on these matters on the 5th. I think it was the Thursday, the 15th. Yeah,
with all due respect, Derek, that's in a different area, different radio station. We invited you on to discuss it on this radio station. Mm. It was strange to be signposting elsewhere to avoid talking about it here. But you've been responding, yep, have you, to the government's commitments or aspirations to do something about immigration in this country. I presume you don't believe them to be, you don't have much faith in them. Is that the case? Or what is your actual view?
Yeah, I'm sorry for using that as a broadcast. I apologise for that. Greg, I haven't been on with you, but what I'm trying to say is I don't agree with how this has been handled, mm-hmm, and I haven't agreed with it for a while. I sent into your show the letter that's in the Indo last week.
Yeah.
If you want, for your readers, just to understand where I'm coming from, I could read that. It's only take one 30 seconds to a minute. Donegal has done much to help displaced people, but collective well is now dry. We in Donegal look forward to the implementation of the Integration Minister's latest repackaged plans of not using the last hotel and amenity in many of our overstretched and bemused communities. We take with a pinch of salt his aspiration of committing to rebuilding trust in the immigration system and distributing housing fairly around the country, while conversely and yet again unsustainably doubling the reliance on the commercial and private accommodation sector like our remaining hotels onto 2028, 4 years from now. In the meantime, take note that Donegal, out in front and leading the pack, is housing at twice the national average for IPAS immigrants. With half our hotel beds already gone to this use, we won't be betting these efforts work or hoping the Minister recognises we have staked and surpassed our regional quotas already. Our collective well has truly run dry in Donegal. Dublin will just have to dig its own pool deeper from here on in. Our communities won't be fooled again by castles in the sky, nor place bets on such frozen horse policies with the same old odds offered by also-ran ministers in their final furlong. I wrote that the week before last,
yeah,
and that's what I sent into your show. So that's really, Greg, I suppose that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, okay. So to verbalise that, are you criticising the government up until now, saying you've no faith in what they might do into the future? Are you looking for a review of the hosting of IPAS refugees in Donegal?
Exactly. Greg, thank you. You've hit the nail on the head. I couldn't have put it better. I used the first minute to say that I've been doing this quietly and slowly, but in public and in the national press and on the radios. It's not a response to an IPAS centre, we were told yesterday, setting up in Killybegs this coming week. It's exactly what you said. I've been calling for the Attorney General to get a grip on this, for the Rossa Fanning, two before he's put out of a job after Leo goes. Also, the controller and auditor general, Fianna Fáil's man, for the complete and utter waste of billions of euros, particularly in Donegal, Kerry, and Monaghan making millionaires out of it. I am a tour guide, as you introduced me. I spend a lot of time seeing how many millionaires per square mile are in Donegal with the fishing. Now I'm going to have to add in with the refugee crisis. That's on the back of wars and famine and major problems in the world. I understand that. But, you know, Killybegs shouldn't have to take the brunt of that. Well, your last speaker, I didn't quite catch his name. Was it John somebody, was
John
it?
John McAteer of the Chicago Tribune.
Oh, John spoke wonderfully. And again, it's very hard. John mentioned 12,000. I was listening to what you were both saying, and I concur with both of you, particularly what you said, Greg. It's not about the 12,000 empty houses. It's about the 12,000 extra people arriving here without one extra doctor, without an extra bus, without an extra anything. And before anything is said that their extra bus service is put on, you know, they were put on a long time ago. You know, the figures that I was looking at are 1,600 Ukrainians 2 years ago when these services were put on. We have 8,000 or 9,000 Ukrainians, and we probably, at a guess, 4,000 or 5,000 international protection in the county in the last 2 years. You know, we're a small... I'm writing a guide to southwest Donegal and a larger one to Donegal for tourism. So I ring departments and I say, what figure do I use? Do I use the 2 years ago figure for 166,000, up 4,000 from 2016 census? Or do I use the new 12 or 13,000?
But just
figure?
Out of interest,
and you know what the answer is.
But why, yeah. Why and this is just a curiosity I'd ask you if we weren't on the radio, what... To tourism, if you're doing a tourist guide and welcoming people to Donegal, presumably talking about, you know, beautiful Bundoor and Donegal Town, Sleeve League, Aran Mór, Burtonport, what are you talking, why would you be talking to tourists about the number of Ukrainian refugees or IPAS residents in Donegal? How does that tie in with your tour guide?
Great question. I wish you were on one of my tours today. The first page of my guide says the population of County Donegal is 167,000 plus or minus 12,500. That's what the government want me to say, because these people are not staying here, they're going. Well, I'm talking to these people as a taxi man, as a bus man, as a community representative. Some of these people are in picking litter off the street, and some of the groups I'm involved in, they're in the heritage group. They're not going anywhere. They are staying here. They're marrying people, they're buying houses. This is in this area. This is the reality. We have to get a grip on this. So in my book and on my tours, National Geographic come in here. The first thing they say is, what does Killybegs mean? How many live here? And how many live in Donegal? And what does Dunanall mean? So I have to explain everything. It's the four to the foreigner. It's the town, the little cells. That's, you know, I have to be precise. And I update every year my facts and figures. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm not being facetious with you, Greg, or to your listeners. I'm just saying, what is Derek Vile to do on Browns of this? They're waiting on me to come back to them this week, probably last week. Do I say the population of County Donegal is 167,000 plus or minus 12,500? Because they're going home, the government tells us. Or do I tell them the reality?
And what
the, there's
what?
An extra 13,000 people here.
What do the tourists say to this? Some of them probably not with fantastic English. Like, are they going...
They all have fantastic English. They all have fantastic English. Okay. You know, it doesn't matter what part of the world they're coming. The Ukrainians I'm dealing with have fantastic English. You know, they understand exactly. They want to know. People want to know. How many people live in Killybegs? Do I tell them 1,200 people, or do I tell them the extra 300 that are here? Do I tell them there's a new IPAS centre coming this week with, we're told, 22 in six bedrooms? If that's anything to be believed from my sources, six-bedroom houses in Lochinure and Dunloe started with 15 to 20 and have 30 to 40 in it, but no extra services. Mm. You hit the nail on the head. No extra doctors. No extra transport. The people, and I say 100% give the people coming to Donegal. Like, I am an ambassador for Donegal. I always will be. I have to even a debate with my own brother, George Vile, that you interviewed last year. I think you had him on the show. You know, he's questioning my integrity on this matter. So I had to say to him by text just before I came on
your
show.
Here. Can I just say, I tell you, George isn't here. I can't remember who George is just at the moment, but it's just maybe easy to keep that between yourselves on the text rather than hammering it out on the radio. With respect, it's just I can't sort of...
I know that, Greg.
You're referencing someone else's point of view. I fully understand where you're coming from, and I understand that you role the role you have in tourism and tourism selling Donegal, which is great. Mm. The way you combine them seems a little bit unique to me, but that's your choice, Derek, and you have your concerns, and I have to go for the 10 o'clock news. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for sending us in the letter, and have a good day.
Greg, I appreciate your time.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Okay. 0866 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or call 07491 25000. I just needed a little time as well before the news to tell you that the phone lines are down in Tammany Health Centre this morning. I'm told if you're trying to get through, the Tammany Health Centre, by the way, is in Fannad, but if you were trying to get through, you would know that anyway. If you need to get through to the doctors, please call the following number. You can either call in, by the way, or call the following number, 086-896-8089 before 1 p.m. today. Now, obviously, you're not going to have a pen probably to hand, just take that number down. So if you need the number for the Tammany Health Centre in Fannad, give us a buzz and one of the team will pass it on to you. Their phone lines are down at the moment. So you might be trying to get through thinking they're not answering, but the case is that it's a technical issue. All right, so that's that. 086-6025000. One more time, just to remind you of that number. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices here on the 9 till noon show.